Hello. You are listening to the Grieving Parents Sharing Hope podcast. We are here to walk with parents on their unwanted journey of child loss, guiding them to a place of hope, light, and purpose, not in spite of their child's death, but as a way to honor his or her life. And now, here is your host, author, speaker, and bereaved parent, Laura Deal.
Hi, this week's episode is from a Zoom session I did with Umbrella Ministries. I started out sharing a very shortened version of Becca's story. If you don't know it or you would like to hear the long version, I just shared that 2 weeks ago in episode 249, so you can go and listen to that. So we are going to jump in where I picked up right after I shared Becca's story of how we lost her from this earth. I don't have to tell you that that changed everything in my life. I didn't even know that that kind of darkness existed. You know, we all know at this point, our lives consist of a before and after, doesn't it? It's everything is a dividing line of before and after. Now, before Becca died, I was an international children's minister, and I did continue that for a while, mostly on autopilot. I even planned out and took a trip to Kenya and Uganda within that first year of Becca's death. And when I got home from that trip, I thought I was having a really hard time getting over jet lag. But I found out that I was actually in severe adrenal fatigue and that my organs were starting to shut down. And so children's ministry is a high energy thing to do. And grief is not, especially when we are, you know, grieving the death of our child. That's a very deep, hard, and heavy thing. And so I realized these two things were not mixing very well. So I did step down from the children's ministry, and it took me like 2 or 3 months to be able to, you know, I just pretty much was on bed rest for like a good 2 or 3 months. And I did go through a season of feeling like I was never going to be whole again, especially in a way that God could flow through me or be able to be effective to minister to people around me. And, you know, ministry is very important to me. I've been a worship leader, just a lot of different ministries and seasons in my life. And somewhere along the line, I had read or heard the statement that spiritual blessings come wrapped in trials. And I wrote down, you know, the death of a child is a pretty deep trial to wrap a blessing in. I mean, it didn't sit right with me at all, right? And what I heard the Lord respond to me that I wrote down was he spoke to my heart and he said, I know because my son died and it was wrapped in the blessing of you. And that really hit me. And I thought, okay, God, if there are still blessings for me, you know, I don't see it. I don't feel it. It's hard to believe it, but I'm going to hang on to you with everything I have until I start seeing some kind of blessings in my life again, until my life has meaning and purpose and somehow there's goodness in my life again. And it was almost like, if you're familiar of the story, when Jacob wrestled the angel that, you know, in a lot of scriptures, it seems to be the Lord he was wrestling with. And the angel said, you know, let me go. And Jacob said, I'm not letting you go until you bless me. So the angel touched his hip. He had a limp the rest of his life, but he did receive a blessing. So that was kind of how I felt. You know, God, I'm not going to let you go until I start seeing some of these blessings that you say you have for me. And it was probably around that time that God started helping me shift some of my perspective, some of the things that I was seeing and struggling with. And, you know, I was seeing everything through my eyes of grief. I was seeing everything through my darkness, my pain, my loss. And God wanted me to start seeing things through different eyes. Before I share a couple of these examples, I do want to say that I really strongly believe that our perspective has so much to do with how long we stay in our place of suffocating darkness. And I know that when our child first dies, that first year, two, three, I mean, we are thrown into this pit and we really don't have a choice. We have to walk through this and we have to find our way out. But we get to a point where we can start to make little choices and we can start choosing to change how we see things as one of those choices. A couple days ago, it rained all day here in Wisconsin. And I would say, for the most part, when it rains, a lot of times we see, an all-day rain as a nuisance. It makes running errands messy. It causes events to be canceled. It can put us in a dreary mood. So a lot of us, we can get upset about having a rainy day. But as you know, rain is needed. It's needed for nourishment. It's needed to bring life, especially like you live where Michelle lives. You got a lot of desert area. You know how needed the rain is. And so we can have a change of perspective in how we see the rain. We can see the rain as a nuisance and a pain, or we can see it as something that's needed. We can even go out and dance in it if we want to and be childlike. And just go out and dance in the rain and get all wet and have fun with it. So much of it is, even just something as simple as how we see rain, a rainy day, is based on our perspective. And so perspective has a lot to do with how we live our lives. So the decisions we make, how we feel emotionally, how we feel mentally. One of the things was I remember, starting to think about getting further and further away from Becca. Now, Becca died in October, so that new year hit early. And going into a new year without Becca, I mean, that calendar changing over, I felt like I was leaving Becca behind. It was horrible. And, feeling like I was getting further and further away from her was just, I mean, almost a panic to where almost I felt like I couldn't breathe. I couldn't think about being a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. I mean, it just like I couldn't breathe even thinking about being here that long without her. And one of the things that God spoke to my heart was that I'm not getting further away from her. Every day I'm getting closer to her. Every day I'm here on this earth, I'm one day closer to seeing her and being with her again. And so that was just one area where God helped change my perspective. Now, yeah, we can go back and forth on that, and it may not take away the pain, but it helps me to think I'm getting closer to her, not further away from her. Another time, God led me to Philippians chapter 4, verses 4 to 8 and verse 8. You're probably familiar with this. It says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate, think on these things. And so I actually wrote down every part of that verse, whatever things are true. And then I made myself write a list of things that are true. What is still true in my life? What things are still pure in my life? What things are still of good report? Where, I still have four other children. I had two grandchildren at the time, Becca's daughter and another grandchild. What things are still lovely in my life? Starting to look for those things and actually writing them down. And it wasn't based on how I felt, but it was based on the truth of what God says. And maybe the truth of what my head knew, maybe my heart was having a hard time agreeing or seeing or feeling it, but my head knew this was the truth. My head knew this was praiseworthy. I knew this should be lovely in my life, right? These kinds of things. And so I went through the whole Bible verse that way. And as parents, we always find ourselves sacrificing for our kids. We put our kids ahead of ourselves, don't we? But when our child dies, we are consumed by what we lost, and we have a hard time comprehending what they have gained. And so this was another change in perspective. I started to think about Philippians 1:21, where it says that to die is gain. And okay, so we know, yeah, I want to die. I want to gain that, But in thinking about what Becca has gained, and to just let my mind imagine what heaven would be like for her being there right now, to counterbalance my perspective of what I had lost and even what I felt like Becca had lost. She's not going to be able to raise her daughter. She's not going to be able to see her daughter graduate high school, get her driver's license. She's not going to know what it's like to be a grandma. All these things that I felt like Becca had lost and I had lost. because I'm not going to be able to see Becca be a grandma. I'm not going to be able to see Becca, watch her daughter get married. All these things that, we just all lost when Becca died. But if I start thinking about what Becca has gained, it can help to counterbalance some of that when we allow it to. And I realize that Becca is actually more alive than I am right now. She is more full of life. She is in a perfect body. She's surrounded by God's glory. And I think sometimes we have to stop and think about what is God's glory? Because I think sometimes that's hard to define. It's hard to, what is God's glory? How do we make that tangible? How do we really understand that our children are in the glory of God? Well, in Exodus, we read where Moses asked God, "Show me your glory." He wanted to see God's glory. And God said, "Okay, I'm going to show you all my goodness." God didn't say, "Okay, I'll show you my glory." He said, "Okay, I'll show you all of my goodness." So to me, God was saying his glory is his goodness. And it's so bright that God told Moses, "You're going to have to stand in this crevice of a rock. And when I pass by," God put his hand over that. And then he lifted his hand so that Moses could only see the backside of God. Because if Moses had seen the fullness of God's glory, if Moses had seen the fullness of how good God really is, Moses's body wouldn't have been able to handle it, and Moses would have died right then and there. And so it's crazy to think that God's glory is his goodness, and his goodness is so good, it's so bright that our physical bodies would not be able to handle it. But that is what our children are experiencing, is the fullness of God's glory and his goodness that is so strong that our physical bodies couldn't handle it. And when I think of that, and when I think of that's where Becca is, it's kind of hard to feel sorry for myself when I'm so happy for her. So incredibly mind blown on what she must be experiencing right now in that goodness and that glory. And I wasn't planning on sharing this, but I do want to say real quick, I know a lot of parents struggle with, but I don't know if that's where my child is. That's not a happy thought to me because I'm terrified. I don't know if that's where my child is. And when I have parents that come to me with that struggle, I always tell them, you don't know. You don't have all the information because our children could have received the Lord when they were young. And God knows their heart. God knows that childlike faith that was still in them behind whether it was rebellion or whatever it was. Our child could have reached out to God maybe in teen years if your child was old, was able to live that long. And I think a lot of times our teenagers, they don't want to tell us that because it's like, because then now mom's going to say, "Are you reading your Bible? You should be going to youth group. Have you been praying? Have you been," and they don't want to hear all that. And so they just don't tell us. Okay. It could be a time where they couldn't put words to it. They didn't pray what we call the sinner's prayer, but they cried out to God and there was a change in them and they know that they have God in their life. They just didn't tell us. They didn't know how to word it. They didn't know the Christianese for it. Or it could be that God loves your child so much that that moment, that exact moment when your child was crossing over, Jesus reached out and said, "Are you coming with me now?" And your child said, "Yes." That's all it takes. That's all it takes is to receive the invitation of Jesus. And so it could have happened that exact moment. Why wouldn't Jesus? Because he tells us, he makes it very clear that it's not his will that any perish. So why wouldn't he reach out that moment that somebody crosses over to reach out and say, "Here I am. Do you believe me now? Are you coming with me now?" And our child said yes. And so the thing is, we don't have all the information. We don't know what we don't know. And so we can either choose to live in fear of what we don't know, or we can choose to live in faith of what we don't know. They have the same root. It's the unknown. So we can either choose to walk in fear of what we don't know and be tormented by that fear, or we can choose to walk in faith and trust and have peace that, yes, God reached out and my child said yes at some point in their life, even if it was in that moment of crossing over. And so I believe when you do hear about heaven, you can picture your child there and you can believe that your child is there waiting for you because you don't have all the information to make that decision yourself and to live in fear and torment yourself with that for the rest of your life. So, let me get back to some of these shifts in perspective. Hopefully that helps someone here. A couple more shifts. One thing is just the reminder that this life isn't permanent. Our time here is, I mean, this is all we know. This is the tangible, what we see, think, touch, what we smell, everything. This is what we know. But it really is only a blip. It's just like a nanosecond in the perspective and the process, in eternity, in the line of eternity. And so where we're going has none of this. Not, it doesn't have the heartache, the turmoil, the separation. And so to make a shift to having more of a vision for the permanency of eternity. Then we do this vapor of a life that's here today and gone tomorrow that James 4 talks about. And to shift, start shifting our thoughts to the permanent side of eternity. And another thing that we can think about, and this can be kind of tough, and both of these kind of tie into what I already said, but God is always good. I talked about his glory being his goodness. And here, I think a lot for a lot of us, the needed shift comes when we understand that good does not mean that God gives me whatever I want when I want it. That's not what makes somebody good. Are you a good parent? Were you a good parent to that child because you gave your child anything and everything they wanted, no matter what? That is not what makes a parent good, is it? What makes a good parent is also when it's hard for that child to understand, but you have to say no to something. Because there's something, there's a greater good, or there's a protection, or there's something, there's a reason you have to tell your child no. But and they may not be old enough to comprehend it, understand it, but a good parent doesn't always say yes to that child, no matter what they want, when they want it, how they want it. And the thing is, we have to understand we don't have God's perspective of eternity. We have this finite world that we live in. And if we can't see anything good from what's happened yet, then it means God isn't done yet because he is a good God. It's his glory, is his goodness. And so if you feel like I have not seen anything good yet, I believe it's because God is still working and there is good to come. There's a song I used to sing growing up, and it's just a real short little song, God can do anything, anything, anything. God can do anything but fail. He can save, he can keep, he can cleanse, and he will. God can do anything but fail. He's the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. He's the fairest of 10,000 to my soul. God can do anything, anything, anything. God can do anything but fail. It is impossible for God to fail, or he's not big enough to be God. And I know that we feel like God failed when he allowed our child to die, but he didn't. There's something we can't see. There's something in eternity. He sees what we can't see. He knows what we don't know, just like any parent with a child. And when you start having a change in your perspective here and there, a lot of times those shifts, they happen so slowly and they build that all of a sudden it's like a suddenly, a breakthrough feels like a suddenly. But it really is all these little shifts, all these little things that just build on top of each other. Now, I want to turn just a little bit of a corner here. And I'm sure you've heard the phrase, maybe not after your child died, but there's a phrase that says, time heals all wounds. And I don't think that's true. I do not think that time heals all wounds. But what I do believe is that what you do within your time will help move you in the direction of healing. When I talk about healing after the death of our child, I am not talking about like living a life like it never happened, like your child never existed, like, oh, I'm fine now, I can go on with life and it doesn't bother me anymore. When I talk about healing, I mean we get to a place where we can function again and eventually get to a place where life has meaning and purpose again and life is good again. It's possible. And I know at the beginning it feels impossible. And I've had so many parents say that may have happened to you, but I don't ever see it happening to me. But it can and it will if you keep going and you keep stay connected to like Umbrella Ministries, stay connected to other parents who are on this journey ahead of you that can give you the hope. Stay connected to God, even if you're angry with him. It's like Peter said, where else could we go? You have the words of life, of eternal life. And I think for a lot of us, that's how we feel. It's like, God, I am so angry with you. I don't understand. But I don't know where else to go because I need you. And yet I'm just so mad. I'm so confused. But I need you, God. I mean, it's a real conundrum, isn't it? So what you do with your time that heals. And we're talking about getting to a place where life is good again. So I want to help stir your thoughts as to some of the things that other bereavers, now I call us bereavers, parents who are bereaved of their children. If you take the word parents and use the PA, and I actually studied out the word bereaved is the root word reave. And the root word reave, when you go back to the original, I don't know if it's, I can't remember, it's been Latin. It's been a few years since I studied it out. But that root word reave means like a ripping, a tearing, a robbing, something was ripped, torn away from us. And I thought that's exactly how I felt when Becca died. And so if you take that root word reave and you put the PA in front of a bereaver is a parent who's had our child ripped away from us. And so I call us bereavers. So I want to share with you what some other bereavers have done with their time that has helped move them in the direction of getting out of that horrible dark pit to give them a life of meaning and purpose again to where their life is good again. And it's very different than a lot of us thought it would be. But are they still deeply missing their children? Oh yeah. But life has been good again, even with life looking different and missing their children. Now, some of them pick up an old hobby or they start a new hobby. Now I know one mom, Heidi, out in Oregon. She used to do pottery and she actually picked up pottery again. She has a little shed now. She does absolutely beautiful, beautiful pottery work that she does now. Another friend I have started she just started a whole new hobby. She started refinishing furniture, like with that chalk paint and that stressed looking furniture. Making wood signs with sayings to the point where she ended up opening up her own indoor booth at a high-end boutique to sell what she was doing. Finding a hobby can help you start taking your thoughts off of your loss for a while. And yes, the sadness will still be there, but it is helpful to be able to have your thoughts occupied with something that your hands are doing. Sewing, gardening. Maybe you used to do stamping. So get back to stamping, making scrapbooks, cards, coloring, paint by paint numbers, start a collection of something, take an auto mechanics class. I mean, it's like the options are so endless of the hobbies and the things that you can do. You can volunteer somewhere to help others. And this is a key that a lot of grieving parents have found successful because there's something about helping others that lifts your heaviness a bit and it opens your heart to warmth and goodness. And I know sometimes we feel like I can barely function much as helping someone else. But there are so many even little things that we can do. Picking up a piece of paper that someone dropped, they didn't realize they dropped. I mean, even something as simple as that. But serving at a homeless shelter, volunteering at an animal shelter, that's a good one because animals can really do a lot of healing for us. Donating time at a local food bank, a clothing bank, Help raise money for an organization that has a special place in your heart because of your child. There are so many organizations that need feet on the ground to keep their doors open. And that's something that you might be able to do. And there are actual brain studies that have shown and proven that there are good changes that happen in the wiring of our brain that takes place when we help others when we're still in our own deep struggles. I find that fascinating that there are actual changes and chemical changes in our brain that happen when we are in our own deep struggle and we help someone else, that it does something. It's that cortisol and all those chemical things that it really does help. And here's one that may sound really unusual, but getting a pet is an option. I do know of several grieving parents who got a pet to help comfort them and to bring some joy into their lives after the death of their child. And some of these parents, they can't say enough about how much this pet has helped them physically. Because if they get a dog, you got to go out and walk the dog, those kinds of things. Emotionally has helped them emotionally. Now, most bereavers I know that get a pet, they get a dog. I'm a cat person. Okay. Cats are, I think, are wonderfully entertaining and they don't take a whole lot of care. So getting a pet would be another option. And like I said, I know you may feel like you don't have the energy to do any of those things. And it's one of those vicious cycles. And the only way out of it is to make a conscious decision to move in the direction of doing something. Something, no matter how small. Because once we make that effort, it's going to begin to pull us in the needed direction, causing some of the needed healing for our well-being. Now, we may think that our child did not get to fulfill his or her purpose because they left this earth before we did. But let me just say we don't know that because God had a plan in place for us before we were even conceived. God had a plan for our child before we were even conceived. Okay? God had a plan for our child before our grandparents were even conceived. And this is something that I have spent time thinking and praying about. How is it that God created each one of us with a plan and a purpose for our lives, but our child seemed to fulfill that purpose so much earlier than we did? How were they able to do that if they died at a really young age or even in the womb? Or what if our child died while they were in rebellion or, one of those where they were struggling with addictions? Does that mean that our child missed fulfilling God's purpose for their life? Well, Jeremiah 29:11 is one of these verses that sometimes it can either be an anchor for us or it's one of those we just want to rip out of our Bible. It seems like it's a verse that either goes one way or the other for those of us who've lost a child. But it's the one that talks about how he knows the plans he has for us, plans for good and not for harm. And Psalm 139 and Job 14 tell us that he knows the number of our days here on earth. We also know from John 10:10 that the enemy comes to kill, to steal, and to destroy. So, did the enemy stop God's plans for the lives of our children? But the Bible also says in Job chapter 42 that no plan of God's can be withheld from him. Okay, so I feel like I can just go round and round on these things, just round and round. And my mind just can't seem to land on anything that makes sense of all this, except we are only looking at our time here on earth. But God is looking beyond this into eternity. What if we see our purpose as something that we do here on earth? But God looks at our purpose through the eyes of who we are from the moment of conception right through our entrance into heaven and even beyond that. So, are we looking at our purpose as something that is external and based on the natural realm here on earth when maybe our true purpose is spiritual and it's eternal? Now, just because I don't understand why Becca died doesn't mean there was no purpose in it. And I know that can be hard to hear. But what if our child's purpose, what if Becca's purpose was done here on earth, but it's still continuing in eternity? What if the purpose of our child's death here on earth was to influence our lives so deeply that we touch others in a way that affects eternity on behalf of our child? For instance, out in California, when I was out at an Umbrella Ministries out there, I met Anne, and she started an organization going into schools against bullying after her child died by suicide because of being bullied. A lot of you may be familiar with Doug and BJ Jensen. They had that sign language choir called Love in Motion that literally traveled around the world as they ministered to grieving parents after the death of Jay and a pregnancy loss that BJ had. There's a woman named Kelly who wrote a book, and she started a national ministry to those who faced a pregnancy loss after her own losses. I have friends here in Wisconsin, Dave and Dee. They hold a yearly run for, it's called QT long heart disease. Some people call it adult SIDS. They die in their sleep and you don't know why. It was found out she had this QT long heart disease, but they do a run every year and they donate heart defibrillators to local businesses now. Angelique, a friend of mine in Florida, has recorded this powerful song that her son wrote 2 weeks before he died. And she ended up recording it. And the songs that she now writes and sings have a much deeper message, specifically for people who are hurting and lost in that hurt and pain. So I think you get the idea. All of these people are people who have chosen to do something with their time that brings a measure of healing to both themselves and others, along with having a life of incredible meaning and purpose now that continues the purpose of their child in an eternal way. Now, after Becca died, Dave took me shopping to replace a guitar. I'd had a guitar for years, and I loaned it out to somebody, and he hawked it for drugs. And I didn't have a guitar for years. And so after Becca died, Dave took me out shopping for a guitar, and I started writing songs again. And my songs that I write now are for people, especially bereaved parents, people who have faced deep losses. And I actually have a CD out there. I mean, I'm on Pandora. That's weird. That's really weird when you can find yourself in places like that. And, like we shared at the very beginning, my husband and I started what turned out to be, I mean, we just started meeting with another couple in our home who had lost their son. It was a suicide. He had served several terms in the military. I think he had been in Desert Storm, but he had a lot of the PTSD things, wasn't getting the help he needed, and they were really struggling. So we just started meeting with this other couple, and then we ended up having a little get together, and it turned into a little day conference thing. And then we had someone from there begging us to start a group. And then from there, people started contacting me and saying, "Can you come here? And can you meet me with me there?" And God started giving me books to write, and it just became this national ministry. We ended up getting a motor home, traveling for 5 years, hosting retreats and meeting with parents and speaking to support groups and just having coffee one-on-one at a Cracker Barrel with another couple or a mom or something. I have a podcast now. Last year we had like, I want to say 100, 150,000 downloads, something like that. It has just gone into something that I never would have thought it ever going to. And all of us could say that the death of our child was life-changing, but so is what we're doing now because of, what we feel led to do with our time to help others heal and to help ourselves heal and to help our child continue living through us and having an eternal value. Would I rather have Becca here? Oh, yeah, definitely. But that's not a choice I have at this point. And so we can see these things as God's purpose for my life or for all those I just mentioned after the death of our children, but I see it as the eternal purpose of our children continuing here on earth through us. Now we do because we are. We are the parents of a child who's died. We're filled with God's Spirit. We may still be here on earth, but we are eternal beings with an eternal purpose. So, how do you figure out what your eternal purpose is here on earth while waiting to be reunited with their child? Well, I tell parents, follow the breadcrumbs. So, what do I mean by that? Well, what or who are you drawn to now? Maybe it's something you enjoyed doing before your child died, and you just feel drawn to start doing that again. You know, playing the trumpet, playing the clarinet, and all of a sudden it's like, man, I kind of feel like I'd like to play my clarinet again. I don't have one, but you know, I mean, just crazy things like that. But for a lot of us, it changes, and we might think it feels weird and it makes no sense. For me, I love to speak and give presentations. I love to travel. You know, that's why part of my children's ministry that I did. When Becca died, that didn't change. Although, as I shared, I had to step away from children's ministry to work through that grief and the darkness and everything. But I went back to traveling and speaking. But instead of the subject being the passion of children's ministry, it's now a passion and a love for walking with other grieving parents from a place of darkness back to a place of light and hope again. I have a friend. She's actually the one that connected me with Umbrella Ministries. The first retreat I ever went to after Becca died was in Indiana. And her name is Lynn. And she became an ordained pastor after the death of her young son because her level of compassion to shepherd and help others through life and help them to know God better through both sorrow and joy just seemed to be birthed in her out of what she went through. And I'm pretty sure the thought never crossed Lynn's mind to be a pastor before her son Joel died. So, how do we both know what our purpose was? How do we know that? I feel like it's a natural progression. That's why I say follow the breadcrumbs. We may find ourselves being drawn to something, and we allow that to pull us down a path, which is what happened to the parents that I've talked about. Maybe you feel drawn to return to the hospital where your child spent a lot of time with a lengthy illness. And it could be a very painful thing to think about, much less actually going there. But you can't explain, you feel this desire and a pull to go there. So maybe as you follow that inner pull and you keep going where you feel drawn, even when it doesn't make sense, maybe it's going to lead you to where you will eventually find yourself living from that place of meaning and purpose. Maybe there's something there that God has for you that's going to make an eternal difference that you don't know yet. It could be helping others who are dealing with the same thing you went through. Maybe you'll find yourself working toward making something safer, bringing public awareness to an issue, raising funds for needed emergency equipment. Maybe it's continuing something your child started, but they didn't get to finish. I have a friend, Connie, who her son had started this thing of leaving Bibles and they had numbers on them. And he would leave Bibles in all these strange places and then with a note or something highlighted. And then he would ask whoever found that to, you know, read what had find what had been highlighted or a note that was left, and then write your own note or highlight a verse and then leave the Bible somewhere else. And so this woman continued that and she put together a website where people can actually say where they found the Bible and watch these Bibles travel all around the nation. Some parents I know end up doing exactly what they were doing before, but they have a much greater purpose for what they love. Like Angelique, that I said, you know, who her son had written that song and she ended up recording it. And the things that she does now with her music is so much deeper and so much richer. So just think about what you may feel drawn to right now. It could be a certain group of people, it could be a place, could be a situation, maybe a hobby, could be nothing at this point. Okay. The important thing is to not pressure yourself and don't feel like you're doing something wrong if you feel stuck in this area and you don't feel like I'm just not there yet. It's okay because it can take several years for the fog to lift enough to discover that you're being drawn to something that could feel like it's giving your life meaning and purpose again. When I was 3 years old, I was riding on the handlebars of a bike my dad was pedaling, and I got my ankle caught in the spokes of that bike. It took out a big chunk of my ankle, and I was taken to the emergency room, and the injury actually turned into staph infection, and it caused some muscle and skin to deteriorate. And I remember we lived in Missouri at that time, and I remember my family, we had cousins and aunts and uncles up here in Wisconsin, and we came up to visit, and my sister and my cousins all got to play in a pool, and all I got to do was dangle my good leg in the water on the edge of the pool, and my bad leg was wrapped up in a bread wrapper. We used to use bread wrappers for things like that. I couldn't play with them and have fun. Now, I did totally recover. My right ankle's weaker than my left because of the loss of the muscle. I still have a scar on my ankle. I always will. When my husband Dave was 48, he ended up having quadruple bypass heart surgery. Recovery took a long time, and it's been almost 15 years, and he still has some effects from it. He's got a permanent scar from it, reminding us of what he went through. Now, here's a big one. I talked about how my daughter Becca had an amputation when she was only 3 years old. She obviously had a scar on her stump where her leg had been cut off. Did staph infection keep me from ever swimming again? Especially if there's a beach involved. Warm water and a beach. Did Dave's surgery keep him in bed for the rest of his life? No. It may limit some of his activities, but he does live a very full life, keeping up with me, driving the Hope Mobile, our house on wheels, for 5 years. He does a lot of behind the scene things for our ministry to grieving parents. So did having an amputation keep Becca from running and playing with the other kids? It didn't. And believe it or not, I travel with this. Let me back up a little bit. This is Becca's first leg when she was 3 years old. What do you do with your child's leg? You save their artwork, you save things. I saved her leg. What do you do with it? But having her leg amputated didn't cause her to not live a fulfilled life. It changed how she ran. She had a lot of things she had to adapt to and do differently. I had a front row seat to what it was like, but it didn't stop her from living a fun and a fulfilled life, getting married, having a child. Her life looked different, but she still had a very fulfilling, happy, and meaningful life. And when these horrible things happen, including something as terrible as the death of our child, does it mean that life is over and we'll never be able to live a full life again and life will never be good again? I'm here to tell you that's not what it means. We need to go through a recovery process, for lack of a better word. We need to learn how to function with our child no longer here. It's like our child has been amputated from us, and we have to figure out how to live with that part of us missing. It's not impossible. It doesn't mean that we're never going to be able to function again. We're going to go through times where everyone around us is splashing and playing, and we're not able to join them because of our wounds. We're going to go through times where we can't function and we have to wait for another measure of healing. We're going to go through times where we have to adjust the way we do things. We are going to forever bear the scar of our tragedy and the loss of our child from here on earth. And we're going to have things that are going to be triggers and reminders, but we are not permanently injured to the point of being out of commission for the rest of our lives. Like I said, our child's been amputated from us. We have to learn to live with that part of us missing again. You're never going to be the same, but it doesn't mean you're never going to be able to live a fulfilled and a good life again. Our scars mean we're never going to forget, but they don't mean that we're never going to be able to function again. And just because your child is no longer here on this earth with you does not mean that their purpose for eternity has been fulfilled. So how will your child's life and death continue to affect others for eternity through you? This just may also become your eternal purpose. Now, there's one last thing that I want to share with you here. And that is the need to wave a white flag of surrender. Because none of this is possible without laying it all down and giving up your need to know why. There's something in us we need to know why. We feel like we need to know why. But even if God were to tell us why, would it satisfy you? No. It would be beyond what we could comprehend, probably. We would just want to argue with him about why his reason isn't good enough, just like a teenager would argue with us. They want the keys to the car. We tell them no. They want to know why. If you tell them why, oh, do they happily go to their room because they understand now? I'll go find something else to do. No, they want to know why because they want to argue with us why our reason isn't good enough and we should give them the keys. Okay, I feel like we're that way with God. We want to know why. And if he were to tell us, we would just want to argue with him about why his reason isn't good enough because we don't have the perspective of eternity that God has and that our children have now. So God can't give us a life of meaning and purpose again if we're still hanging on to blaming him and demanding answers that aren't going to make sense anyway. A better question would be, how? How, God, how are you going to get me to function again? How are you going to get me to want to live again? How are you going to give me a life of meaning and purpose? How are you going to take that verse that everybody throws in my face? Well, God works everything out for good. How are you going to do that, God? And those are the questions that God is going to answer. I'm glad you asked. Let me start showing you how I'm going to do those things again. So when you think about it, how can life be good again if you're fighting against the one who can bring you the comfort and the peace that you need, and even joy back into your life, shining a light on the path that is so very dark right now? And I know that saying that is easy. It's easy to say, doing it's not. And I think of a child that has been told no, and they're mad and they're screaming and they're maybe throwing a temper tantrum and maybe they're pounding their fist because she doesn't understand and she wants what she wants. And so dad scoops her up in his arms, and she's still beating and fighting. And eventually, she just wears herself out. She's exhausted, and she just falls into her dad's embrace, who's already holding her while she's so mad. And I think you can see the correlation here, because I think this is a picture of the surrender for some of you. And it may just take until you are so exhausted of fighting God about this that you finally fall into his arms and say, I give up. I can't fight this anymore, God. Do what you want to do with me and with my life. And this is when you will begin to see what God has been working on behind the scenes. Now, there is a song, I don't know, I'm not going to play it for a bit. I just want to show you. It's called I Surrender All. And there's a guy who sings it, and that is just, I think if you're one of those that really struggles, I would suggest you find this. I Surrender All, Stephen McWhorter. Michelle can send I can send Michelle a link if you guys want me to send out a couple things to you. But just sit with this song and do your best to surrender. Close yourself in with God, have a deep conversation with him. You know, God created music to be a pathway to our soul. And I think that version of the song is something that can really touch you and help you wave that white flag of surrender if that's something that you struggle with. And it's not just a one-time thing. We have to surrender over and over again.
If you didn't catch it, the song I was referring to, I Surrender All, is sung by Stephen McWhorter. Stephen is with a PH, and McWhorter is MC capital WHIRTER. Now, I will put a link to that in the show notes that will take you directly to that song in YouTube. Sunday, we got an exciting email that this podcast, Grieving Parents Sharing Hope, got the Podcast of the Year award in the religion category from the American Writing Awards. As a listener, you're part of this, so I wanted to make sure you knew about it so that you could celebrate this with us. To keep the momentum going for this podcast, if you have not given us a rating or a review yet, would you please do that? Just back out of the episode and go to the show itself and click on the stars, hopefully 5 stars, to rate it. And then click on reviews and write a sentence or two on why you like this podcast or why you recommend it to another bereaver, a bereaved parent. So thank you for helping us out in this way. And I also want to say thank you from the parents who decide to listen and receive the hope they need because of what you wrote about this podcast. Before I share the birthdays for this week, let me just say that if you want to know how to have your child's birthday shared in the birthday segment I'm getting ready to do, be sure to listen all the way through because I always share that, how you can get your child in this section after I read the birthdays. Stephen Kowaleski was born on March 11th and is forever 28. Quentin T. Flowers was born on March 12th and is forever 54. Matthew Branca was born on March 15th and is forever 23. Rowett Matthew was born on March 16th and is forever 23. Adam Block was born on March 16th and is forever 34. Zachary Sutton was born on March 16th and is forever 32. Danielle Jerome was born on March 16th and is forever 32. We celebrate the day these children came into the world. We know it will always be a very special day to these parents and to their families. If you would like to have your child's birthday announced the week of his or her birthday, all you have to do is go to gpshope.org/birthdays. A form will pop up with the information we need, the name, the date, that kind of a thing. There's a place where you can write in the pronunciation of your child's name if sometimes it's not said correctly, because I do want to say the name of your child correctly for you. And so just fill in the information, hit the submit button, and we will add your child to the birthday segment, his or her birthday week. And Dave will also send you an email to remind you to listen. Now, I thought about splitting this up into 2 separate episodes, but obviously I decided not to and just let it be a longer than normal episode. I know some of you like the longer ones, so I'm pretty sure those of you that do are happy with that decision. So let's play the rest of what I shared when I was speaking to the parents with Umbrella Ministries.
So just let me real quick sum up the things that I've shared with you. A change in our perspective can make a big difference in helping us start to feel like life can be worth living again. If you're struggling with this, ask the Holy Spirit to start showing you some areas that He wants you to be able to start seeing differently to help with this, because it is worth hanging on and fighting for. I gave you a reminder that it is impossible for God to fail, or He wouldn't be big enough to be God. Time does not heal all wounds. It's what you do with your time that helps you bring you out of that place of darkness and back into a place of meaning and purpose again. Some suggestions: pick up an old hobby, start a new one, volunteer somewhere, get a pet. Because our child is no longer here does not mean I no longer have a purpose. We tend to look at our child's or our purpose as limited to this earth, but God sees our purpose and our child's purpose through the eyes of eternity. And our child's purpose may have included giving our lives a different purpose now that will help others and honor our child, leaving a legacy behind for both of us. And to figure out what your eternal purpose might be now, follow the breadcrumbs. Having our child amputated from us doesn't mean we can never have a life of meaning and purpose. We can still learn how to have a good life, even with that part of us missing. And none of this will help much if you've not come to a place of surrendering to what He did allow to happen. Stop blaming Him instead of the enemy and wave that white flag of surrender, saying you are allowing Him to still be Lord of your life, trusting Him with the outcome. And if you are wanting the life of your child to make a difference in this world through you, then just keep going. One day, one step, one breath, one tear at a time. And I really fully believe it will lead you to that place of having a good life again, a life with meaning and purpose. And this is not in spite of your child's death, but it is because of his or her life. I would like to just pray over all of us right now, if that's all right. Father, we just come to you as wounded and hurting parents. Lord, some of us are confused. Some of us are angry. Some of us are in that place of suffocating darkness, and we don't think we can ever come out. And we don't even know if we want to come out. We just want to be done here to go be with our child. But Lord, I know there's more. I know there is so much more that matters for eternity. And it has to do with our child, Lord. And so I pray for each one here today that you would show them. Lord, help us to wave that white flag of surrender and allow you to be Lord of our lives once again, and allow you to shed light on that path, change our perspective in the areas that need to change, Lord. Begin to show us those shifts that we need to see, and begin to draw us to that eternal purpose that our child still has that is probably going to come through us. We thank you, Lord, for the peace and the faith that we can have that our children are with you, Lord, that you did everything possible. And we are going to stand in faith that our child accepted and received that gift of salvation, even if it was that split second when they left their body in this earth. And Lord, we thank you for loving us and loving our children that much. And we look forward to the day when we can see them and be with them again, never to be separated. We thank you that Jesus came and made that possible. And until then, Lord, help us. We need your help. We can't finish this life without you. So help us, God. Help us to have that life of meaning and purpose again. Help us to even believe that life can be good again. Give us the hope that we need. And I pray these things in the precious name of Jesus. Amen.
I hope there were some helpful things in here for you today. I look forward to being with you again next week. And until then, remember to hold on. Pain eases. There is hope.